CBD Revolution. The world is discovering CBD and its potential for numerous health benefits. Hemp Fusion Wellness is the premier company looking at CBD with a whole food perspective. For the highest quality CBD oils and products for stress, sleep, energy, and topicals, it's Hemp Fusion. This CBD Revolution highlight has been brought to you by Hemp Fusion Wellness, U.S. trading symbol CBDHF, and in Canada, CBD.U. Web address, hempfusion.com.
The proceeding may contain forward-looking statements which may not be realized.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Anatole Levin of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft. An essay that Anatole has published in response to an essay and remarks by Professors Daniel Dewdney and G. John Eikenberry, not just about the schools of internationalism, liberal internationalism, or realist internationalism, realism versus liberal internationalism, but in examples is everything, because there are exceptions, there are lessons here. And we go immediately to the tragedy that hangs over us right now, which is Afghanistan. And it's attached to the tragedy of Iraq. However, the Afghanistan evacuation at the close gave an illustration to the fears and the anxieties of all countries watching the tragedy of these people frightened and crowding together in knowing that they were great at risk with their children. And still today, it has not ended. The people evacuated, the people seeking to evacuate, are their lives are upside down and recovery is not available right now. So we turn to how and why America plunged into this circumstance of tragedy. It echoes Vietnam. It can echo other parts of American foreign policy and British foreign policy, NATO foreign policy. But I read from Anatole's essay. He quotes the National Security Strategy of 2002. This is the Bush administration. Consequent of the 9/11 attack on the U.S., Washington, and New York. But before and during the Afghanistan incursion, but before Iraq, the administration wrote, "The great struggles of the 20th century between liberty and totalitarianism ended with decisive victory for the forces of freedom and a single sustainable model for national success, freedom, democracy, and free enterprise. In the 21st century, it is 2002 at this time, only nations that share a commitment to protecting basic human rights and economic freedom will be able to unleash the potential of their people and assure their future prosperity. People everywhere want to be able to speak freely, choose who will govern them, worship as they please, educate their children, male and female, own property, and enjoy the benefits of their labor. These values of freedom are right and true for every person in every society, and the duty of protecting these values against their enemies is the common calling of freedom-loving people across the globe and across the ages." Anatole, end quote, you are an internationalist, at the same time you're a realist. That quote hangs over what we know happened between now, 2002 and today. Hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of people's lives damaged to the point of destruction and ongoing. In that quote, is that a ghost that is going to reappear again for the American people?
Well, I'm afraid so, yes, because you see so much of this language having been used actually by the Trump administration, as well as the Biden administration in this, you know, build up of hostility to China. Well, you know, for the same reason, you know, I said about Blair, it's completely historically and culturally illiterate. And it is something it also misses completely, is the fact that, and this is not well understood in the United States, which of course has had a very different history. Given their national experiences, including, you know, over the past century, you have to understand why people in Russia, in China, in India actually, are deeply afraid of chaos, of state collapse and anarchy. You know, there's a saying in the Middle East that one night of anarchy is worse than 100 years of tyranny. And, you know, if you've ever lived in a state that has fallen to pieces and what, you know, what follows, one understands that very well. And therefore, you know, and you could say that for good reason, as we saw in Egypt, as we saw in Iraq, as we saw with the opposition in Syria, as we saw in Libya, many countries, you know, do not generate successful democracies when their authoritarian systems collapse. What they generate is chaos and, of course, civil war between bitterly opposed forces with totally incompatible views of how their countries should be run. So this idea of one universal automatic model is both intellectually crazy, but it's terribly dangerous when the United States actually pursues a policy based on this. And what a realist internationalist would say is that, of course, we need international cooperation. Climate change shows that. COVID shows that. The need to regulate international trade shows that. But this cooperation has to be between independent states, different centers of power, and these different states have to find their own way when it comes to shaping their political systems. Nobody has either the right or the ability to do that for them.
And in realist internationalism, how does it make a distinction between liberal internationalism in the example of Afghanistan and Iraq? Where is the divergence? Because both of them, both schools are well informed of the facts of depredation and tragedy following events such as 9/11.
Well, I suppose the realist position is well summed up in the title of a book by Obama's advisor, Ben Rhodes, The World Is As It Is. In other words, you know, we don't live in a potential utopia. We can hope that things will improve. But the world is made up of different states, some of them very powerful, with different national interests, with different political systems, which in many cases are supported by their populations, whether they're democratic or not. And that if we want to generate the cooperation, which we do really, really need, then that has to be through seeking compromises and accommodations with existing states, not trying to destroy existing states in the name of an American-led liberal utopia, which, as we've seen over and over again in the past 20 years, is not going to happen anyway.
And Afghanistan, we'll stay with that example and not speak of Iraq. Now that America has retreated and now that the Taliban is back in power, as we understand it, it's non-transparent. America has come home, domestic matters dominate, but still the tragedy of Afghanistan continues. We know this because so many of the people who've been evacuated will have connections with back in Afghanistan. How does liberal internationalism view this? Are we going back in? This mission is as vivid now as it was 20 years ago about the darkness visible of Afghanistan's conduct towards its families and its people, especially towards its women and children. And how does realist internationalism view Afghanistan now?
Well, liberal internationalism, of course, would want to intervene as far as possible, though I can't believe that anyone would be crazy enough. Well, actually, there are one or two, but not many people would be crazy enough to suggest that America should reinvade Afghanistan. I suppose realists say two things. One is, once again, a majority of Afghans live in the countryside. And unfortunately, that is from ancient times, as far back as one can go, a very patriarchal, conservative, and oppressive place as far as women are concerned. I personally dislike that intensely, but I'm not going to pretend that the Taliban created this. They didn't. I saw it, you know, vividly when I traveled in the Afghan countryside in the 1980s. We have neither the right nor the ability to go in by force and try to change that. We can try to change it through the force of our example and through various kinds of aid. But above all, if we want things that are in the vital interests of the United States and the West and the international community more widely, namely prevention of international terrorism from Afghanistan and a crackdown on the heroin trade, and not so much in America, but very much in Europe, in Russia, in Iran, in other places, it is heroin that is killing more people than terrorism ever did, then we have no choice but to try to work with the Taliban government, put pressure on them when appropriate, and aid them financially when appropriate in order to get these results that we need. As in Afghanistan, as in so many other parts of the world, as by the way the United States does continually in Egypt, Morocco, Algeria, Saudi Arabia, wherever, that requires us to work with regimes whose ideologies we don't like because they're there and the world is as it is. That is the realist position. The point, though, is that you should do that in pursuit not just of American goals, but of international goals, of peace and cooperation for the sake of the common interest of humanity.
Anatole Levin, writing most recently in a dispute that is ongoing for at least 75 years, it will continue in the 21st century, between two schools self-named, liberal internationalism, and the example is Vietnam that we started with, and realist internationalism. The example is those who held back from Vietnam, Harold Macmillan, the Prime Minister of Great Britain, for example. And realist internationalism now is again in the conversation because of the tragedy in Afghanistan. There will be others. This also applies to the great geopolitical powers of China, NATO and the United States, but we've stayed with the so-called small wars. We're going to turn to another challenge to American understanding, and that is Russia. This is Anatole Levin of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft. I'm John Batchelor. This is CBS Eye on the World.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.